KNOM Profiles.
During his AFN address in Fairbanks last week, Governor Sean Parnell spoke about his declaration of an economic disaster in the two communities on St. Lawrence Island. Residents in Gamble and Savunga depend on the yearly migration of walruses, the subsistence staple for islanders. And this spring, thick sea ice kept hunters from getting to the pods of walruses moving north for the summer. As a result, Savunga and Gamble took about one-third of their average subsistence harvest. Paul Rokuk Sr., a member of the tribal government in Savunga, says walrus is the most vital resource for St. Lawrence Islanders.
Walrus has been a main source of income for people, or some kind of economy, subsistence economy for thousands of years. Walrus has been the main resource that's made our people survive on the island.
Since the August disaster declaration, there's been no real aid from Governor Sean Parnell's administration or the Alaska legislature. So far, the announcement has been purely symbolic. As fall storms batter the community ahead of cold winter weather, options for offsetting the abysmal walrus harvest are running out. It isn't easy to understand at first what a huge blow this season is for Savunga and Gamble. Together, the two communities usually get about 1,000 walruses in a year. Most Pacific walruses weigh in the neighborhood of 2,000 to 3,000 pounds, with some bulls nearing 2 tons. A lot of that weight is thick hide and bone, but still, it's literally tons of meat. On top of that, St. Lawrence Islanders have been selling walrus ivory to outside buyers since the 50s. Ivory sales are still one of the few ways residents have for converting subsistence resources into cash, which people need for heating oil, gasoline, and bills. This year, Gamble and Savunga got only 370 walruses combined. At the most basic level, this amounts to thousands of pounds less of food, and not all food is equal. Walrus is the choice meat for many on the island. Larry Kava, president of the Marine Mammal Advisory Council in Savunga, explains the versatility of the island's staple.
The livers, we fry them. The meat, sometimes we ferment them, like the coke and the flipper. We ferment them, and some of them the meat, we hang them up, dry meat.
Compensating for all the protein and nutrients in walrus meat often means paying for expensive groceries shipped in to the one store in Savunga. But that requires cash. A lot of it, since groceries are about 3 times mainland prices. And budgets are already lean. According to an assessment in August by the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, household incomes in Savunga are more than $9,000 below federal poverty guidelines, and that's factored using a year with an average subsistence harvest. It doesn't include a year like this one, a literal disaster. Paul Rokuk says it isn't really enough money to rely on store-bought groceries.
Most of our people are disadvantaged, you know. Our areas are classified as low-income areas, you know, by the state and federal government as well, maybe. A lot of our people look to public assistance many times, you know. But that doesn't last very long with food prices.
Rokuk says people have begun compensating through thrift. He's been keeping the thermostat lower in his home to save on heating oil. He and others supplement store-bought groceries with subsistence resources that are being harvested later and later into the fall. Though berries and greens are mostly gone by now, there are still roots, seaweed, and sea peaches. And people in Savunga are relying more heavily on fish and birds. This, however, presents its own problems. Hunting isn't cheap. With gasoline at $6.50 a gallon, a trip to the island's south side looking for walrus or checking nets for whitefish costs between $120 and $150. Rokuk says that so late in the season, it's only the fortunate who can afford the expense of going out often. And since last December's shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, there have been nationwide bullet shortages, with manufacturers running months behind trying to fill orders. The most popular calibers are the hardest to find. The .22s used for seal hunting have been sold out in the Savunga and Gamble native stores since the spring, as have the .30-caliber rounds Kava says are preferred for walrus. Neither store knew when they'd be getting more. While rural communities haven't seen the same stockpiling that have kept shelves bare in Anchorage, it isn't clear to most people how they'll restock from suppliers in the city. The Savunga native store has bricks of shotgun shells for $35, but Adelai Pungawi says the shells she uses for hunting geese and cranes are $60 to $70 for a 10-pack. Larry Kava pointed to a seal blind buried into a rocky point jutting into the sea. Hunters wait behind the slight wooden walls until seals swim close enough to shoot. This is one of the last options for serious subsistence catches before the winter migratory patterns and sea ice make it harder to get at large mammals. And even this is changing. Coastal erosion has entirely erased the beach that once stretched 70 yards past the seawall. It's part of the reason a 2010 storm was able to crest, sending freezing spray over power lines, knocking out Savunga's electricity for days in the dead of winter. Another reason is fluctuating weather. This year's thick sea ice, kept tightly packed by an unusual southwesterly wind, is yet another example in a trend towards growing variability in global weather. The animals themselves are also becoming less dependable. Kava says that because of increased shipping activity in the Bering Strait, there's more noise disturbing marine mammals.
Ever since the ships start traveling, the pattern has changed. Like I said before, when I saw one walrus a week ago.
Vera Metcalf, director of the Eskimo Walrus Commission, says that companies chartering vessels in the Bering Sea region are good at communicating when they'll be passing through the straits. The Coast Guard also monitors all the ships passing through. From those records, it's clear that shipping traffic through the Bering Straits has more than doubled in the last 5 years. Of the 250 ships passing through in 2012, most did so in the summer, as the sea ice is breaking up. Around the same time, walruses ride the retreating ice shelf up north into the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. And then there's seismic testing. Right now, for example, the Texas-based company TGS is conducting an expansive survey of the Chukchi Sea's floor for clients in the oil and gas industry. The seismic maps give companies a better idea of where deposits are likely to be ahead of bidding during lease sales. An August report by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said the agencies had reviewed TGS's plans and found them to meet existing environmental protocols. But those standards assess effects on marine mammals in terms of their biological health, meaning the seismic testing might not physically hurt whales, seals, and walruses, but there's no evidence that the underwater vibrations don't alter their migratory patterns. Kava and Rokok both insist the noise spooks herds of walruses. Similarly, the federal report fails to mention that the U.S. isn't alone in its seismic testing permits this year. Canada and Russia have also approved exploratory efforts in their corners of the Arctic. There's way more noise in northern waters than any one nation is equipped to assess right now. And as the report also concedes, there's never been a long-term evaluation of seismological effects on ocean ecology. Nobody is certain what the coming winter holds for residents of Savunga and Gamble. That's partly because nobody remembers the walrus harvest ever being this bad. The communities are in new territory.
I don't know what the people will do.
Kava remembers a winter in the 60s when an abysmal harvest led to airdrops of dried fish. But things in Savunga have changed so drastically since then that nobody knows what to expect. So far, the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation has sent just under 8,000 pounds of fish to St. Lawrence Island, but that's the equivalent poundage of 3 or 4 walruses. Otherwise, there's been no help.
There was a small shipment of salmon, and we had halibut. That's the only help we got. And they're all gone now.
No real aid has come from the state yet, beyond simple recognition that the two communities are facing a potential crisis. Unlike natural disasters, the state of Alaska has no designated funds to send struggling communities. And the state legislature, which could pass a measure extending tangible relief, is out of session until January. In his disaster declaration, the governor said the state would coordinate with the communities in St. Lawrence Island to get them needed assistance. But Paul Rokok says no aid effort has been made since it was pledged 2 months ago.
I haven't seen anything definite after the declaration, you know. I haven't seen anybody come in and start working as they promised with the organizations of the communities. Nothing has been done.
And just on the cusp of winter, a third community is about to request a declaration of economic disaster. Diomede's walrus harvest brought in just 4 adults and 2 calves, about 1/5 of the small island's average take. Residents there coping in many of the same ways as St. Lawrence Islanders. According to Eda Akinga, part of the tribal government in Diomede, people are eating more canned food from the store. In addition to rough fall weather keeping boats docked recently, there's the sky-high price of gas in Diomede, $8.30 a gallon. Akinga says the community is readying documents to file for a disaster declaration. It would have been done sooner, but the government shutdown kept them from being able to verify their take numbers with federal agencies. On St. Lawrence Island, there's still a chance of getting late-season seal and walrus meat into freezers as the mammals move south for the winter. Heating oil, additional fuel subsidies, cash, and food would all help the community in Savunga. Anything to chip away at expenses and free up cash to use for hunting supplies while there's still time in the season. For KNOM Profiles, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Profiles is a production of KNOM News and Public Affairs.